This is the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter. Presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Now, here are Denise and Hunter, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome, everybody, to this Tuesday edition of Newsmakers at Noon. I am Denise Quinn.
And this is Hunter Newton.
big news. All the talking heads, everybody, all the national guys are talking about it. We're not going to do that today.
No.
I'm kind of glad.
No, we need a calm day at this point.
Yes, and some tangible, hard stuff that we can wrap our brains around, some good things. And I think, and I'm so glad she's joining us in the studio today, our friend Amy McLeod from the McLeod Group, Keller Williams. Hello, Amy. How are you?
I'm doing awesome.
Yeah.
Ready to talk some real estate today.
Yes. Let's do it. There's so much crazy stuff going on in the world. Let's focus. We always start off with you with the stats, what's kind of going on with the numbers. So let's start there.
Yeah. So with all this crazy stuff going on, the nice thing about the stats is they're not really changing.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's a lot of same-o. So where we are this year, we're sitting at about 2.5% less sales this year than we were last year. Now, putting that in perspective, at the peak of the market, which happened in 2022, we sold 4,426 units. Right now, same time, comparing year over year, we're sitting at 3,063. So a drop of more than 25% in the number of sales.
Okay.
That's pretty significant. When we look at the terms, top sales terms for the year, 74% of homes are sold with conventional FHA or VA. So what I want to say to homeowners out there is if you're selling your home, we're starting to advise our clients of this for a couple of reasons. We're suggesting that you get a pre-inspection, that you find out what the repairs are. Because honestly, Denise, we're still seeing the hangover from homes in 2008 where sellers took the attitude, well, if my house isn't appreciating, you know, I'm not going to put money into it. That was a big mistake because things that used to be, you know, we'd see $5,000-$6,000 repair bills. Now we're seeing $25,000, $30,000, $35,000.
And that's because of delayed or no maintenance.
It's kind of this laissez-faire.
Did the kind of the, again, those unicorn years where, you know, 21, 22, where they're like, oh, let's forego the inspection altogether. Is that adding to it?
Yes. That came on the heels of a seller's attitude of, I'm not going to do anything. Then the buyers were put in a position where if you wanted a house, you took anything.
Yeah.
Well, now a whole bunch of people have muscle memory. The sellers have a muscle memory of their neighbor that didn't have to do a thing. And the buyer has muscle memory of, you people wouldn't do anything for me. So if you want me to buy your house, since I'm in high demand, buyers are in high demand.
Yeah.
then I'm going to ask you to do all of these things. And the challenge is that, you know, if you're moving on to something else, you really want to have a good picture of what your net proceeds are going to be. So 75% of these houses are selling with a lender that's going to expect some repairs. All right. So the rundown for our neighborhoods, it's again, pretty boring. Kaiser is up 1% from over last year, 478 now to 484. Central, we were seeing a lot of good growth there. Well, now it's leveled off. We went from 362 to 352. That's a 3% drop. What we call sub east, that's east of Lancaster, north of Center Street or State Street. Sorry. We're seeing zero change there.
Oh,
flat.
Okay.
And the south end of that section on that east side of Lancaster, a 1% drop. So, but not big, 447 down to 443. Southeast is over there, Pringle Creek, Battle Creek, kind of that area. 525 down to 521. Okay, so you flat, relatively flat.
Yeah.
And then the south side, Candelaria, you know, Hidden Springs, that sort of thing, a 1% increase. West Salem, oh, they should be happy because we were kind of on a drop there in West Salem for a while. And now we're flat. 516 this month showed up at 514. Linn County shows no relative change, 455 to 456 average price. Marion County dropped 2%, 541 to 533. So it sounds like the run to the county is
kind of done. Yeah. Okay.
Sounds like it. But the big hit is Polk County, which I don't understand. Pretty well-run county. 517 drops down to 499, a 3.5% drop. Overall, our total average is it's flat, zero. Hmm. Another area that was kind of interesting is that inside the city, the highest number of units sold month to date was in that suburban southeast area, east of Lancaster, south of State Street, down to Cordon Road. 115 units. That was the highest number of units. And here was the average sales price, $456. Mm-hmm. So that kind of tells you a story. Now, average sales last year, the number of sales were 732 at 507. Now, interesting, this year, the average price is 475. Last year, it was 507. Now it's 475. And we should be, if we were on track for the same amount of sales we've kind of seen over the last couple of years in new construction, we'd be at 366. Instead, we're at 284, even with a reduced price.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I've been yelling at my baby boomer friends and saying, would you please stop telling our younger generation there's no hope for them to buy a house? That is not true. That is
they
not
are
true.
Out there doing that, aren't they?
They are. And we need to stop it. We need to remember that many of us bought our first house at 17, 18, 19% interest.
Yeah.
And we need to remind our kids that a 6-day work week, a 6-hour work day is not overtime. So
really? That's a thing?
Well, I guess it is kinda a thing. Yeah. It is a thing. But we need to be encouraging them in they can still purchase a home. But you might have to do some things. I was rolling out my book from, the early 90s. We were still at 10, 11% interest.
Yep. Yep.
And I was saying to a group of realtors, we said, we'd say to people, can you hold a garage sale to collect some more money for your down payment? Can you go get a job at 7-Eleven for 6 months and don't spend the money, put it away? We were trying to be creative with people. Can you sell this more expensive car and drive a beater for a while?
Yeah.
So we can, it's where you're putting your priorities, but people our young folks are not reprioritizing because we have adults telling them there's no hope. You'll never own a house. So
what a shame.
Knock it off.
Yes, I agree.
61% of our houses are sold between 300,000 and 550,000. The most challenging price point, if you own 960 to 1 million, 1.5 million to 1.75 million, up to 3 million, that is the most challenged price point. Between the three of those price points, we got about 75 units sold in the last year in four counties.
Okay.
The messy middle, though, where it gets tough, you got to be competitive. You got to want to win the beauty contest, is between now 560 and 810,000. So if you're in that range, and if you think about it, our average first-time home buyer is now 40 years old.
That's crazy.
Right. So they're not doing, they should be our move-up buyers. Then we have the active. We've got about equal inventory between $350,000 and $660,000. So there's reasonable inventory for you to look at there. What we're looking at is the number of listings is about the same as 2025. But our sales are down 2.4%. So if you're a seller, what that's telling you is you got to come into this market ready to do what it takes to win.
Yeah. None of this. I'm going to dip my toes in and see.
Nope. This is not the time when your realtor. In fact, I just looked up somebody yesterday. They came into my office 3 months ago. I said, your house is going to sell at 650. Oh, we really wanted 675. So, they followed their ego. They found an agent who took it at 675. And I just noticed that 3 months later, it sold for 650.
Oh, gosh.
So you spent 3 months with carrying costs and you didn't listen to somebody who told you the truth in the beginning.
I follow a lot just before we take a break too, because I follow that. I got a listing that I saw the more rural area and you're seeing them dropping. somebody dropped it by $2,000, like a 400.
Oh, silly.
It's like, what are you doing? Now I know you well enough and have listened to you. That was my exact, I'm like, well, that's just a waste of everybody's time.
100%. Yeah. Because if we go back, even $5,000 is a waste of time.
Yeah.
That's worth $30 in your payment. Really, in the average price house, you're looking at a $15,000 price reduction. That equates to about $90 a month in payment. That's, you know, now 2/3 of an electric bill.
Yeah.
And it starts to make a difference. But you really... $2,000. Oh, geez.
They're just trying to make it look more appealing. I mean, they could have gone down, you know, $399,999.99.
And all of that is old-time real estate marketing tactics. $2,000 used to bring you up to the top as a, you know, refreshed listing. But now with the access to the internet, people see right through that. The listing history is there.
Yep.
And the conclusions that people draw when you behave that way is that you are an unreasonable seller. And you don't want that.
No, you don't. You don't. Okay, interesting. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back and talk about, the big, beautiful housing bill. Mm-hmm. Okay, again, we're talking Real Estate Insights with Amy McLeod. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Color Tile of Salem.
Alrighty, we're talking all things real estate with Amy McLeod today, the McLeod Group, Keller Williams. So the big, big, beautiful housing bill. This is the one that we're watching the news. This is the one he's kind of sitting on a little bit with the... using some leverage there?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay.
So there's a lot of talk this week about the housing bill that's sitting on his desk. And whenever Congress passes something this significant, I know my phone starts ringing with the same question. Is this finally going to make it easier to buy a home?
Okay.
And, you know, the government is here and we're here to help. No. The answer is, well, yes, eventually, but probably not in the way that most people are hoping.
Okay.
This is one of the biggest housing bills that Congress has passed in decades. And what's interesting is that it received bipartisan support, and that doesn't happen very often anymore.
Mm-hmm,
and we are going into midterm elections. So the overall goal is pretty simple, build more houses.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if we're honest, Denise, that's the root of our housing affordability problem is for years we've simply built fewer houses than Americans need. And that started in the 08 downturn. Builders left the industry. A lot of the talent left the industry, got retrained. And then even when things started to loosen up, we've talked about how a lot of those builders went to more expensive homes so that they could make up, you know, the 10 years that they lost.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get it.
So when demand keeps growing but supply doesn't, prices go up. That's Econ 101.
Yep.
And what the bill does to actually help us build more houses, it attacks the problem from several angles. And one of the biggest pieces is reducing some of the red tape at the federal level that slows new construction.
Okay, that's good.
It is good. It's not the whole answer.
Right.
Anyone who's tried to develop land knows that projects can sit for months. Here in Oregon, it's waiting for permits, environmental reviews, regulatory approvals, neighbors who want to complain, not in my backyard, even though they built their house in somebody's backyard previously. So the legislation tries to streamline some of the federal processes. And it also encourages cities and counties to approve more housing by tying certain federal funding to communities that are actually producing more homes.
Oh, that's
so that is a good lever, because really so much of the tie up, other than say like environmental studies, so much of the tie up is at our city halls. We need to demand more from our city governments in terms of efficiency and effectiveness.
Yeah,
we should demand that they get into a posture of saying yes instead of the posture that they have, which is frequently saying no.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, instead of saying that you should build more, it's saying if you build more, there will be additional federal support available. And that's a different approach than we've seen.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Another piece that's interesting is on manufactured housing. And I'm not sure how I feel about this one, but I know some people still picture manufactured housing from 40 years ago.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And today's manufactured homes are dramatically different. They're pretty well built, energy efficient, attractive. You know, a lot of things that they do in manufactured housing, frankly, RVs, have been good transfers into regular housing.
Yeah.
They've learned how to use space better and that sort of thing. They provide one of the most affordable paths to home ownership that exists today in terms of the structure. Now, hopefully we can deal a little bit more with, you know, like if you're renting a space in a manufactured home park, it's pretty expensive.
Yeah, because I would ideally want that on my own land.
Yes, yes. So, and then, you know, there's always the talk about Wall Street investors and are the, you know, and they are mentioned in the bill. Uh-huh. It is one of the more talked about provisions, placing restrictions on large institutional investors and private equity firms that continue buying up single family houses. But, and I'll talk more about this in our next segment. Let's keep this in perspective. The institutional investors are not buying every house in America. In certain markets, they become serious competition for first-time home buyers because they do make cash offers quickly and they purchase homes in large numbers.
I was just going to say, they're not buying like the one little 1949 cottage on the corner there that you're also bidding on.
Right.
They're looking at more newer developments and...
Well, like you go down into Arizona, into the new construction neighborhoods.
Yeah.
And many of those will have a term in the deed that you can't... You can't rent it or, you know, you have to live in it for 2 years. You have to, it's your personal residence. So they tried to kind of put a damper on that sort of stuff.
Okay.
So the goal is to level the playing field a little more so families have a better opportunity to compete for houses. And is it going to change the market? You'll see in a minute why probably not. But it could reduce one source of competition. It also makes changes that most consumers will never notice directly. It updates several HUD programs, including providing more housing counseling programs, community development programs, disaster recovery efforts, and then it makes it a little easier for community banks and smaller lenders to offer mortgage financing. And that's a good thing because a lot of times buyers get stopped in the underwriting process.
Yeah.
And so your local bank, you know, if we can get back to those personal relationships. So these aren't the headline grabbing changes, but they will make the system work more efficiently. So should buyers get really excited? Well, we need to keep our expectations realistic. The bill is not going to lower mortgage rates. It's not going to suddenly reduce home prices. Congress doesn't really have a switch they can flip to make either of those things happen. Instead, this is a very long-term strategy. People probably will not see the results of this. I saw one report 3 to 7 years out.
Okay.
But if builders can build more homes and if communities can approve more developments, if manufactured housing can expand, if institutional investors own fewer family homes, then over several years, we should see more housing available. And that's Econ 101, more supply, then prices go down, affordability rises.
So I would see this having a real benefit in states that don't put as many restrictions on builders, where you'll probably see a bigger boom. Oh, I don't know. In red states?
Well, that's where I was going to, I'm like, the one that stuck out to me is you said, you know, the federal level is streamlining and eliminating and making things more convenient. I said, and we here in Oregon have a governor who said they'll do everything the opposite of whatever the federal level does. So I'm going, the big holdup is local, state to citywide. And yet we have leadership that says we're going to just add more and get more fees and more time and more delays.
Well, I think she did say that she wanted to increase housing stock. But so far, she's way off track for her goal.
But Donald Trump's signature is going to be on this.
I know. So that just throw that baby out with the bathwater. So I would say don't make your home buying decision on this bill alone.
Yeah.
It's something we've been hoping to see. Our clients don't just need lower interest rates. They need more inventory.
Mm-hmm.
They need more homes they can choose from. When buyers have 3 or 4 homes to choose from that fit their needs instead of just one, that's when the market becomes healthier for everyone.
Yeah.
So the biggest benefits are likely to play out, like I said, over 3 to 10 years. But I wouldn't wait to buy a house because over that 3 to 10 years, housing is appreciating.
Yep.
So, you know, it's going up. And I like to say it's always best to buy and sell in the market you know, not in the fantasy that you have. And I do think it's encouraging that for the first time in a long time, Congress is addressing what many economists think is the real issue, that America simply has not been building enough housing.
Yeah. Yeah. I know we're almost out of time, but I was in Southern Idaho last week, just interestingly talking about red states, Meridian, Boise suburb area, booming, just booming.
Mm-hmm.
Infrastructure going in, housing going in like crazy over there.
Yeah.
And you don't see that necessarily in Washington, Oregon, and California. So it's encouraging, though. But again, it is sitting on his desk.
It is sitting on his desk. And I think it's a question of, I mean, even I as a realtor, let's balance this out. It's sitting on his desk. Something that will impact us in 3 to 10 years is sitting on his desk for something that's so important.
Yep.
And that's ensuring the election integrity in this country. So,
I fully get the reasoning why, but I appreciate you kind of breaking that down, because I haven't really dug deep into it. So it's good to have a realistic time frame on what we can expect as sort of potential benefits from this bill.
Yeah.
All right. So I know when we come back on the other side, we're going to talk a little bit more about those sort of those big buyers that are coming in. I'm not going to mention names, but we all know the names that people, well, they're just buying up big blocks. And so we're going to talk a little bit more about that, which would be really interesting, because that is a concern for some people.
Well,
it's
all about the competition. And like you said in the first segment, you know, the average age of a first time home buyer is now 40. So it's the 40-year-olds are competing with the 25-year-olds and competing with the 70, 80-year-olds all for the same plot of land.
The 40-year-olds are competing with the boomers. Mm-hmm. They are.
It's crazy. It's crazy. It's wild, wild west out there. All right. We're going to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. We have more with Amy McLeod on the other side of the break. Come on back.
The Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance, continues. Here are Denise and Hunter on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape and GA at Home.
All right, welcome back, everybody. We are talking all things real estate with Amy McLeod from the McLeod Group, Keller Williams. So before the break, we were talking a little bit about, you know, there's these big companies. They're out there and they're buying up everything. I can't afford it. They're going to make me rent.
Yeah.
Is that true? Is that really true? Is that really is happening?
Well, it's one of those statements that gets repeated so much that people simply assume it's true.
Mm-hmm.
But when you actually look at the number, the story goes deeper than that. And like we were saying this week, Congress passed that major housing bill. And one of the headline items was limiting large institutional investors from buying more single family homes. Trump even jumped on that train, which was a little surprising.
Yep.
You know, given that he's a realtor or he's a real estate person, I should say.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That immediately made me wonder, well, just how many homes do these companies actually own? And the answer surprised me. So nationwide, large institutional investors own somewhere around 1% to 3% of all single family homes. And that's a much smaller number than most people imagine. So with about 1 million single family homes, not condos, single family homes, that's about 10,000 to 30,000 owned by institutions nationwide. And before everyone says, well, then it's not a problem, that's not exactly true either. Because the confusion comes, here's where the confusion comes in. There's really two different questions. One is, how many homes do institutional investors own? And the other is, how many homes are they buying right now? So those are two completely different statistics. So during certain periods over the last few years, investors, both large and small, I'm included in that, have accounted for as much as a quarter, 25% of all home purchases in some markets. But that doesn't mean they own a quarter of all homes.
Okay.
It's the difference between saying someone bought and sold a lot of cars this year.
Okay.
And saying they own a quarter of every car on the road.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they're in the trading business.
Gotcha.
I made four trades, but I kept one. Okay, so another thing that's important is real estate is obviously incredibly local, and the national numbers don't always tell the story in a particular city. So there's markets in parts of Atlanta, Phoenix, Tampa, Charlotte, where institutional investors have been much more aggressive, especially in neighborhoods with affordable homes that make great rentals. And I can tell you personally, and this is anecdotal, I haven't run into an institutional buyer here in Salem.
Well, when you say institutional, what we think of the big corporate conglomerate behemoth faceless horda that's out there absorbing all the houses. But it really is it also, you know, you or other individuals who are maybe part of a trust that is buying real estate or they own a couple of rental homes. Is that included
in
all of that?
Well, one definition, I think the bad guys, the boogeyman that everybody wants is like the big Wall Street firms that we hear their names, you know, the evil.
We all know them.
Yeah.
We don't need to say them out loud.
Right. We have not seen, I have not seen that here. So I may have realtor friends out here who have, but I haven't seen it. And so I was looking at one definition of what is classified as an institutional buyer. Mm-hmm. And that's the definition was owns more 350 units or more.
Oh, okay. So that's not your mom and pop having a couple rentals.
No, but that could be Robert Kiyosaki. He owns more than 350 doors. Although those kinds of investors, frequently their money is more in apartments. So this is just not a big part of the market. So in some communities, first-time home buyers are competing against large investment firms, but we have high prices here without those firms being here.
Okay.
And so that's very different from saying it's happening everywhere. So if Wall Street isn't buying half the houses, why are homes still so expensive? Well, in my opinion, it comes down to the simple concept that we just don't have enough houses.
Yeah.
So for years, we've added more households than we've added housing.
So it's simply a matter of the good old supply and demand.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And we have to start connecting dots because this all comes to policy.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, you know, actually, like the boomers had like 2.1 children. So if we were looking inside of our own borders, 2.1 children, we should have boomers who are out there buying houses. We should have millennials. I used to call them the echo boomers, millennials out there buying houses. But we have to account for the fact that for quite a period there, we've opened our borders and brought more households in.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to acknowledge that. And that's something that people need to pay attention to when they're thinking about, you know, you can't just claim it's the evil banks about interest rates, evil investor buyers. We have to look at the things that we're also allowing, and that affects housing, it affects education, it affects healthcare.
Yeah, it does.
So interest rates have played a role. A lot of homeowners are sitting on mortgages with rates around 3%. They don't want to sell and give up those payments, so fewer homes are coming on the market. And that keeps inventory tight and that keeps the prices elevated. So one of the reasons this new housing legislation focuses so much on supply is because of those issues. It's designed to make it easier to build homes, reduce some regulatory barriers, and encourage communities to approve more housing. And it's not going to fix it overnight. But over time, look for increasing supply, changes in inventory. That's the single biggest thing we can do to improve. And one of the things that I've been sharing with people is it's not easy to convince builders again to take the risks that they have to take. But y'all can put this in your diary, bookmark it. And in 5 to 7 years, I think we're going to see this problem start to naturally change whether or not we build or not. Because you have people like me, I'm in the middle of the baby boomers. And in 5 to 7 more years, we are people that are going to be selling our houses, moving to, and not replacing it with a home. We'll be replacing it with moving in with relatives. We'll be replacing it with moving into assisted living, independent living, or we'll be replacing it with stepping into the cemetery. So, I mean, that's just the truth of it, right?
Sure. Yep. Yeah. We're realists here. Yep.
Yeah.
Happens to everyone.
You know, we have to watch population trends. And I think that's something that's just going to be a natural relief. A lot of us have those 3% interest rates. And
you're talking about that cohort, the baby boomer cohort is huge. And so there's a lot of people coming out that way. And everybody always forgets Gen X, Gen Jones. Hello, we buy houses too. Hi.
Yeah.
It always seems to pop right over us and go into millennials.
Yeah.
But you're right. Demographic sort of is destiny, as the old saying goes. And so it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, it was interesting. My neighbor shared with me that they've put their deposit at Capital Manor ready to move in 10 years.
Interesting.
They're boomers.
Yeah.
So there's still tremendous opportunities for people to be homeowners. Some markets are more competitive than others. Right now, Salem is a good market to be a buyer in. And you should only be a seller if you have one of those five events in life that really means you need to move. Otherwise, don't. Our biggest challenge here, and it sounds like most of the nation, is not Wall Street. It's simply that we need more homes. And that's why the conversation around housing policy matters so much. So every house built gives another family an opportunity to own instead of rent. And I think, you know, that's what the folks are doing out at Clutch Industries in the South Haven Cottages out there on Gilbert and Sherman. You know, they're looking right now. We can only quote a price range of 365 to 385, but they're doing everything they can to get, you know, you can't buy anything for 375, let alone that's, you know, move in brand spanking new, move in,
in a desirable neighborhood.
A beautiful
neighborhood. I've seen the videos and I mean, they're beautiful.
Yeah. They're, I can imagine moving in there if that was, you know, that was where I wanted to go at 375. It's just incredible what they've tried to do. And then they've attached to it that rent to own program.
Yeah.
So $500 a month while they're getting situated with the city and the county, about 6 months worth. And it's, you know, a savings program for you. So we really want people to call in on that. It is not a long-term rental. It truly is meant as a rental. Until the paperwork is signed, sealed, and delivered. So you see, they're trying to step over the delay at the local level to try and allow people to have a beautiful, affordable housing.
Yeah, and being a little creative and, you know, quote, outside the box thinking on it, because they're really quite nice. And it's that front yard kind of front porch.
Yeah.
Neighborly, hey, get off your phones and go talk to your neighbor.
Yeah, but yet you have your private space. You don't have to listen in the apartment or the condominium, the kid running up and down the stairs or the music thumping through the walls. No, you've got your four walls. So it's very, very, very nice.
Cool. So. And I remember one of the two last times we were on, are the links, because I don't know that I had links, because I do want to send people to that, because it is a creative, you know, unique way of doing it. Are all the links up for that now?
I thought we had put them up.
I'll double check. We'll talk offline, but I want to make sure people can go out and check that out, because you guys have been all over social media. Didn't you have like a ribbon cutting, or you had a
We had our counselors out there. And so, it was very nice. And
And speaking of counselors, you just talk about, as far as it's a lot of it, you know, they've got work going on at the federal level, but it's really at the city and the county level, which
it really is.
Is why elections really matter on so many levels.
Yeah, they really
do. Who you put in those seats makes a difference. All right, we're going to take our last break. We're talking real estate insights with Amy McLeod. We're going to talk about selling and midterms. I need scare music for that. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Cozy's New York Deli.
All righty, we are wrapping up our Real Estate Insights Tuesday with Amy McLeod. So, midterms are coming. We're all aware. We're all aware. Mm-hmm. But what does this have to do with maybe you don't want to wait to sell? What's the timing thought on that for you?
Yeah, well, if you've been thinking about selling your house sometime in the next year, there's one piece of advice I'd give you today, and that's don't let the calendar make the decision for you.
Oh, okay.
If your goal is to sell in the next 6 to 12 months, I'd seriously consider getting your home on the market before September.
Okay. Okay. So- Why?
So, well, people often ask me, like, what does an election have to do with real estate? And actually quite a bit. It's not because the election year stopped people from buying houses. People still get married. They have babies. They get transferred. Life doesn't stop. But what changes is consumer confidence.
Yeah.
And so once we get into the fall, every news channel, every social media platform, every conversation will seem to revolve around politics, and every day brings another headline about inflation, interest, taxes, government spending, immigration, or some new controversy. And of course, it's all portrayed in a negative light.
Yep.
So whether you lean left, right, or somewhere in between, it doesn't matter. Constant uncertainty causes people to pause. And when buyers pause, homes take longer to sell. So the one thing I've learned over my 3 decades in real estate is that people rarely make their biggest financial decision when they feel uncertain. Mm-hmm. And buying a home is emotional.
Mm-hmm.
And if buyers are wondering what the economy is going to look like in 6 months from now, if they're worried about whether mortgage rates might change, if they're hearing every day that the world's falling apart, many simply just decide to wait a little longer. And that creates fewer active buyers for sellers to compete over. So here's what's interesting. The buyers who remain in the market during the election season, they will be serious buyers. It's like our Christmas buyers. They are dead serious.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just simply fewer of them. So it means if you're a seller, you're competing for a smaller pool of buyers than you might have had just a few months earlier. And that's going to affect your bottom line. So another factor that doesn't get talked about enough is we tend to see more listings hit the market after Labor Day. It's kind of the, oops, we wanted to move before, you know, while school was out. Oh, we missed that. Let's move before Christmas. Parents have their kids back in school. Vacations are over. The delay during summer, they decide it's time. So not only can buyer activity soften because of uncertainty, then your inventory increases.
Yeah.
And here we're talking a lot about economics. And so there's more homes, fewer buyers. And that generally means more competition, more price reductions, and longer market times. It's not a prediction that every market behaves exactly the same every election cycle, but real estate is local. We're going to have some important races.
Well, I was just going to say in Oregon, I mean, yeah, it's the midterm certainly, but they're a big, I mean, obviously we've got a race for, you know, who's going to govern the state. There's all kinds of legislative seats up. There's a lot happening in Oregon.
Yeah.
In November.
Yep. So employment here, inventory, affordability, migration, all that matters, but the season often adds another layer of hesitation that sellers will consider. And this is what I tell homeowners. You don't control the mortgage rates. You can't control the election. You can't control what the Federal Reserve does. You can't control what the politicians say or the reporters, but you can control when you put your home on the market. And timing is one of the few advantages that sellers actually have. So if you think about it this way, if your plan is already to sell before the end of the year, why voluntarily place yourself into what is often the noisiest, most distracting, negative news cycle of the year? And instead, listen while buyers are focused on finding a home, not refreshing election headlines every 10 minutes. Because, you know, everybody's trying to capture eyeballs.
Oh, well, I mean, I was doom scrolling this morning. I was doing it myself.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't want people to misunderstand me. I'm not saying homes won't sell in October, November.
Sure.
They will. They always do. But people relocate every day. But when I sit down with a seller, I'm not asking, can we sell your house? I'm asking, how do we create the greatest opportunity to sell quickly with the fewest concessions and for the strongest possible price? And sometimes moving a listing date up by 6 or 8 weeks can make a meaningful difference. I was counseling some people yesterday. I mean, they want to move to Oklahoma. I'm not sure why.
Okay. Well,
but, you know, they were talking about their projects and, you know, maybe we'll get to this in September. And I said, well, A, the election. You're going to be in the middle of election season.
Right.
B, when we get this house sold, do you really want to be going over the Rockies in the winter?
And right?
Yeah. Yeah. So these are the things, you know, you want to think about, not just where you're coming from, but where you're going. Another benefit to selling earlier is if you're buying another home. So you may be purchasing after the election or during the election cycle where there could be inventory available and more negotiating opportunities. Because if you sell now and then you're buying in September, like they will be, so you actually end up in a stronger position because you're in that where everybody's in the confusion malaise.
Right.
And so you buy when sellers have more competition, and that's a strategy worth discussing. So my advice is pretty simple. If you've been saying we'll probably sell sometime this fall, don't wait. Start the conversation now. Meet with a realtor at the McLeod Group. Find out what your house is worth. Get those repairs done. We're going to do the inspections and the repairs. Mm-hmm. Have the photos scheduled. Build your plan. Because once September rolls around, the conversation across America is going to change.
Yeah.
So it's going to shift away from homes and onto headlines.
and to headlines. And then why would you want to add just more agita to the mix?
Exactly.
Because it's like you said, it's already a stressful time. It's the biggest financial transaction most people will make. Why not make it a little easier? Especially if you're not tied to, like you said, some hard line, hard, fast thing. If you've got wiggle room, take it.
Right. Well, and people often talk a lot about, I'm going to time the market.
Yeah.
Well, just like the stock market, there's no timing the market. And the truth of the matter is you can only win on one side unless you want to rent for a while or something. So you have the ability to sell now before eyes are distracted. And then you have the ability to move to your next, the next role, which is your, now you're a buyer. Mm-hmm. And you have that inventory that comes on after Labor Day to pick from. So that's the best way that you could time the market. But again, I like to buy and sell in the market that I know, not the one I'm fantasizing about.
Yeah, yeah. And so. Oklahoma, interesting. I bet you can get a lot of house in Oklahoma.
Oh my goodness. 1,700 square feet, 3 bedrooms, 2 baths, great big yard, brick. The whole thing is brick.
Yeah.
And it was $250. Oh, by the way, the taxes were cut in half.
Mm-hmm.
Half what you would see in taxes here. On property taxes there. Oh, yep. By the way, their income taxes, one half, 4.5 instead of 9.9. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting to see again with midterms and elections and things that come out of that and who governs the state of Oregon. People are going to be making some decisions, I think. It's expensive to live in the West Coast states, for sure. Go ahead.
Well, I always just go, you know, and in the results of those elections, you know, no matter who wins, it seems like half of the society is sitting there saying, we're leaving to somewhere else, whether it's another country or whether it's another state or whether it's whatever. So once we see what those results are, you might see a rush of people going one way or the other.
Well, I hate to say it, but the rush is happening now. Every one of my sales this year has been out of this state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's another reason to get your house on the market now.
That's right.
So it's more buyers, more folks heading out than they are heading in.
That's been my experience. So
I think you're seeing that up in Washington as well. And you're seeing Oklahoma, maybe, I don't know, Tennessee. You're seeing a lot of, you know, Texas, Idaho, Nevada, Arizona.
Yep.
Are getting them and not a lot are coming in. So it is shifting. But yeah, but what you're talking about is why would you want to wait until the big crunch? So I have a feeling, Hunter, depending on what happens in November, that giant sucking sound coming out of Oregon is going to get bigger and louder.
I have my high hopes, but I don't have a whole lot of confidence that we're going to see anything new come out of these midterms.
But gosh darn it, we're going to do everything we can to make sure we're going to be in there working hard.
We're going to try. We're going to try.
Yeah.
Amy, website, where people can find you, always all the details.
AmyMcLeod.net, and that's McLeod spelled McLeod.
So. The way I used to do it when on the Gator Indonesia, McLeod.
Yes. The Scottish version.
McLeod. So, all right. Well, always a pleasure, Amy. We have Amy on. She's on twice a month with us. So if you miss anything this time, she'll be on in a couple weeks. And again, everything that we talked about will be in show notes. All right, everybody, go out and enjoy the day. We will see you tomorrow.
This has been the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Exclusively on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.